Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Muy buenos dias and muchas enchiladas, everybody. Welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show. Thank you for listening. My number is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Lines available right now. That's not going to last very long, though. I hear all the time from you who say, I try to call in. I can never get in because the line is busy. Well, now's your golden opportunity. It'll be busy soon, but it's not right now. 888-914-9149. This is some good news. I'd like to give you good news, especially first thing in the morning. Courtesy of Catholic World Report, major win for Catholic doctors fighting Biden's transgender mandate after appeal deadline passes. President Biden's controversial transgender mandate has been blocked. Kind of like a puberty blocker, but not really. It has been blocked after the administration failed to meet last week's deadline to appeal a court ruling that struck down the mandate earlier this year. Cyrus, you know, it just dawned on me. It's like putting a puberty blocker on this administration.
I did a double take.
That's what they've done.
Yeah.
They're just blocking the natural development that would otherwise take place, ideologically, of course. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals struck down the mandate back in August, ruling that religious groups could not be required to perform procedures that violate beliefs. The deadline for the Biden administration to appeal that decision passed on November 25th, so just a few days ago. The final demise of this unconscionable mandate is a major victory for conscience rights and compassionate medical care in America, says Luke Goodrich, who's the vice president and senior counsel for Beckett Law. Thousands of doctors will be able to do their jobs without the government requiring them to perform harmful, irreversible procedures against their conscience and medical expertise. Beckett, a religious liberty nonprofit legal firm, served as counsel to thousands of other Catholic and religious medical professionals in a federal lawsuit called Franciscan Alliance versus Becerra, challenging the mandate in continuation of a long legal battle stemming from a similar rule enacted by the Obama administration in 2016. Are you sensing a pattern here? Religious medical groups, including Franciscan Alliance, Christian Medical and Dental Society, and Specialty Physicians of Illinois, fought to stop the requirement from taking effect. According to Goodrich, quoted a moment ago, the fight will continue in a similar case pending in the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is expected to issue a decision in the coming weeks. If finalized, Biden's rule would have empowered the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services to force hospitals and doctors to perform gender transition surgeries, in addition to expanding the Obama-era version of the rule to include abortion. I don't want to amputate healthy breasts. Do it. But it's not right. Do it anyway. But she's healthy. She doesn't need this done. Do it.
She's just a kid, and she might change her mind.
Do it. Doctor,
it might mean she's never going to have children when she's
you're fired.
An adult woman.
You're fired. Okay, one more chance. Do it.
I have a mortgage. My kids are in college. What do I do?
You either do it or you're fired. And all that expensive medical education, that's gone up in smoke now. You either grab that scalpel and get to work. Skin that smoke wagon, see what happens. Or you're fired. That's what that means. And that's why this is such a victory. That's such a great line from the movie. Skin that smoke wagon and see what happens. Don't go looking for it, Cyrus. It's okay.
I'm scratching. I'm pretty good with movie quotes. And
that's Tombstone. Man.
That's
when Wyatt Earp confronts Billy Bob Thornton. Oh. And he smacks him in the face three times.
I'm in shame.
Jerk that pistol and see, and go to work. And he doesn't. So he slaps him. Then he says something like, come on, son. something that smoke wagon and see what happens? This, you're blanking on this. You don't remember any of that?
No, it's nope.
I guess that's a good excuse to rewatch it.
There you go. I like that.
It's a good scene. All right. Well, I'm happy to deliver that good news. There's more to it. And if you're interested in reading it and sharing it, you'll find it on the show Twitter feed at P Madrid Show. Cyrus, when you post that, it automatically posts to the show page. So if you have the show page bookmarked on your phone or your computer, it's easy. It's relevantradio.com/Patrick, and you'll see all of the books and articles or videos or whatever we talk about on the program. It gets there, so you can access it for yourself there. 888-914-9149. How about Mark in Chicago this morning? First up, good morning, Mark.
Morning, Patrick. My question deals with my son and his possible fiance. He's thinking about proposing to her soon. Mm-hmm. She is Muslim. He's 30. She's 28. He wants to stay Catholic. He wants to marry a Muslim woman who will not convert. He will not convert. And they want to raise their kids in a two-faith household. And my wife and I are...
That's a recipe for disaster.
What, if anything, we can do. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a recipe for disaster because... Yeah. More often than not, that kind of an experiment doesn't work out. And what I mean by that is usually, for some strange reason, it seems that the whatever the other religion is, in this case Islam, things tend to go in the other direction. One thing to remind him, and this is good, I'm happy to hear that he wants to remain Catholic and he wants to get married in the Catholic Church. That shows some, you know, some goodness there, that he's seeking to do the right thing. And let's try to nurture that. But one of the things that any Catholic party who's going to get married in the church must do as part of the wedding vows and promises is to promise to raise any children that God might bless the marriage with in the Catholic faith. So that's a requirement for a Catholic. He can't enter into a marriage and not have that express intention. So that's something for him to know.
Yeah, he's dealt with the priest in a diocese, a different state, and he signed a form saying that he will do the best he can to raise his children as Catholic. And he has a dispensation now to get married in an interfaith service.
Okay, and so this is a disparity of cult. They call that disparity of cult dispensation. Okay. Well, I can understand why you have concerns, and I would share those concerns if I were the father. If he has gone through the process of seeking a dispensation from his bishop, sounds like he did, then I don't see any reason why this in itself would be a problem, like, you know, for you to attend or something like that if the bishop has given him this dispensation. But I do think it's a very dicey decision on his part to do this. And that actually, the verbiage that you just quoted a minute ago, that, you know, I'll try my hardest to do this, It's almost like having your fingers crossed, it seems to me, because it's a built-in exit. Well, I tried.
That's how I see it too. Yeah.
Yeah. Will he listen to his
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I'm just curious, Mark, in your face-to-face conversations with him, will he listen to your making the case for why he should be raising the kids Catholic? I mean, not only is Islam a non-Christian religion, but it expressly denies the divinity of Jesus. And that in itself is, to my mind, a horror in terms of, you know, raising children in an environment where they're expressly told, well, Jesus was a prophet and he was a great prophet, but he was just a prophet and he's not God. That strikes at the very heart of Christianity. I don't know how you could raise children with two opposing messages about Jesus.
Right. So the potential fiancé has agreed to let the children be baptized, and then their thought is to expose them to both cultures, and at some point they decide which way they want to go and get communion and confirmation, that kind of thing. And so I've been talking to him. He does listen to me.
That's good.
The parents of the fiancé do not want... will not grant permission to marry my son if the daughter will not be accepted into my wife and my family.
And say that again.
She's a wonderful girl.
Say it again.
I'm sorry.
I think there may be a little delay here, Mark, because we're inadvertently interrupting each other. Did you say that the parents said that they would not allow her to marry your son if she was not allowed or welcomed into your family?
Correct.
What do they mean by that exactly? Like, welcome to come over for Thanksgiving or something more?
Well, I think just to be sort of a daughter, you know, a valued daughter-in-law in our family.
Yeah, I don't think that's a problem, especially if she's a good woman, if she's, you know, if she has all right. the characteristics of, or some of them yeah, anyway, she, of a good daughter-in-law.
Yeah, she's a wonderful girl, and it's just that, you know, my wife and I are at odds about what to do next as far as, you know, he's an adult. I can only tell him so much, and I'm trying not to drive a wedge between he and my other children and their parents. So
sure. Yeah, these family dynamics can get very explosive. I can imagine what you're going through. So my advice, if that's okay. what you're asking for, Mark, and I'm not sure if you're asking for advice, but if you are.
I am.
Okay. I think the steps you've taken thus far seem prudent, and the fact that he's gone so far to get a dispensation from his bishop, that's good. Sounds as though, all other things being equal, this would be a valid marriage. It certainly wouldn't be sacramental, of course, because she's not baptized. But it's also maybe, if he's robust enough in his faith, an opportunity for her to, for him rather, to evangelize her and bring her to Jesus and bring her into the Catholic faith in due time. So there's some hope there. And maybe in your loving way, you and your wife, by welcoming her into your family and showing her the love of Jesus and not being shy about evangelizing her, not that you have to, you know, like make it oppressive or anything like that, but just to not be afraid to evangelize her and be open about your faith in Jesus. This could be a good thing insofar as it may be a conversion down the road for her, we can hope.
Yes. From your mouth to God's ears, Patrick, that'd be great. So thank you so much for your advice.
You're most welcome. And I would be very interested in knowing how this unfolds. It's none of my business, of course, but if you feel like maybe calling back in a year's time and tell me how things are going, I'd be interested.
Great. We'll do that, Patrick. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Not that you have to wait a year to call back. That's not what I meant. But maybe in a year's time to see how this turns out. Parents, I recommend that you read the church's document called Matrimonia Mixta. We've posted it before, and we'll get it posted again. Matrimonia Mixta is the church's, you might say, kind of declaration or manifesto on why mixed marriages are not a good idea. In fact, they're really a bad idea. Sometimes it's unavoidable. We just heard from a father whose son is going down that road, so be it. Sometimes you can't avoid it. But if you can avoid it, the church says you should try as hard as possible to avoid it, because it just creates built-in problems in your marriage that are inescapable. If you do not look at reality the same way, I mean, if you and your wife or you and your husband do not share the most fundamental of all reality-based views, and that is, you know, who is God? And how do I relate to God? Is Jesus God? If so, how do I relate to him? How do I relate to the church that he established? What about the sacraments? What about salvation? What do we teach our children? Do we baptize them? Do we not? See, these are all built-in problems. And let's face it, when you go into marriage, you don't need any extra built-in problems. You've already got built-in problems because you're an individual human being with your own background and fears and hopes and strengths and weaknesses and proclivities. We all have them. And so when two people, even though they may be wonderful people, man and woman, and they get married, they're already starting out with built-in problems. Why add more? And more often than not, and this is what the Pope Paul VI in this document, Matrimonia Mixta, which you can guess from the Latin, it sounds a lot like the English, mixed marriages. The church is not discouraging you from getting into a mixed marriage because the church is looking down on non-Catholics. Nothing at all like that. It's rather looking back on 2,000 years of Catholic history and seeing that more often than not, when a Catholic marries a non-Catholic, much less a non-Christian, things don't go well. Some of you are saying, but Patrick, I got married to a non-Catholic or I got married to a non-Christian and it worked out great. Well, I'm happy for it. I truly am, sincerely, very happy for you. But please understand, in terms of percentages, you are in the minority. I'm glad it worked out for you. But for every one of you who say, but Patrick, it worked out for me. And my spouse even became Catholic. That's great. But for every one of you, there are probably 10 or 20 who didn't have that experience. So I encourage you, and even for parents too, I mean, as you're guiding your children and you want them to find a good spouse, again, not looking down on non-Catholics or seeing them as in any way inferior, none of those things at all, but rather so that you can be, as the Bible says, equally yoked and at least start off on the same foot in the same direction with the same belief in God and having God at the center of your life. So Matrimonia Mixta, I would read that. I would also get, and we'll leave it at this, we're going to take a break, get Steve Wood's books for your kids. Once they get to be 8th grade, 9th grade, you know, maybe a little bit older than that, certainly by the time they're juniors or seniors in high school, your daughters should have read Steve Wood's book called The ABCs of Finding a Good Husband, and have them read this before they get swept up into the college scene and all of that that goes with it. Have them read this while they're still young enough and they're still more or less under your direct influence, and it will inculcate in them a certain series of criteria that they're going to look for or should look for in trying to find a good husband. And the other book by Steve Wood is called The ABCs of Finding a Good Wife. I don't get a royalty from these books. I get nothing. There's no benefit to me at all. But I've given those books out and I've seen them work well. And having read the books, I know what's in them. It's really good, solid guidance. So check that out. We're going to take a break and we'll come right back with your phone calls on the other side of this quick message. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Let me ask you, can the Catholic Church have a future if we Catholics don't understand our past? Experience history the way it should be taught in a free online class from Christendom College. Just go to principlesclasses.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right. Hey, Cyrus, we got to crack the whip today. It's Friday, as you may have noticed. So we are almost ready for the weekend, but not quite. So let's do it, shall we?
Crack the whip?
Yeah.
Whatever do you mean?
Crack it, baby. Crack it. Yes.
You should have got out your dog clicker.
To tell me the bullwhip is my response to the dog clicker. When that trans lady is trying to dog click me into gendering her, my response is this.
I need some Indiana Jones music after that, or
no? This is good as it is. I'm a purist.
A caller said we should. What was it? Do the what was it? I lost it.
Rawhide.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. I might try that.
Moving. Keep these doggies moving.
Rawhide.
Peter would not approve of any of this. They would not. Of course, doggies. That's referring to cows. Let's give that some thought, Cyrus. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Tina in Long Beach. Hi, Tina.
Hello, good morning. I may get that whip after I talk to you because I'm going to
I promise you no lashing. You're in a lash-free zone, Tina. It's fine.
Okay, well, I came in late into a conversation yesterday you had with a man. It sounded like a young man, sounded a little arrogant, and he was talking about you asked him, like, as I said, I came in late into the conversation, and you asked him if he would be with, in quotes, you know, have sex with a beautiful woman who lived next door, who was married. And he said, yes, I would. And he, you said, how would you, again, I just heard the end of it. How would you feel if the man in the, if you were the man, if you were her husband? He said, it depends what the man was like. He sounded very arrogant.
I remember.
And it sounded, and it sounded like he would want to be with anybody, even both men and women, from what I heard. I don't know. And he just sounded a little, he may have been a wonderful man, but he sounded arrogant on the phone. And I didn't hear you say, you may have said it before I tuned in, I didn't hear you say, God forbids it. You know, now I'm a practicing Catholic, but I just read Billy Graham's book, and I know this is true of a former Vice President, Mike Pence. They wouldn't be alone. Billy Graham wouldn't be alone with a woman in an elevator. To me, that's a little far, but it's, I think it's praiseworthy. But without his wife, and same with Mike Pence. He said he wouldn't have lunch with anybody, a woman alone, without his wife.
Right. Anyway, and he was mocked mercilessly for saying that, and I agreed with his point, too.
Yes.
Well, I think I can help here, Tina. So the fact that you didn't hear the first part of the conversation, I think, is what explains it, because the caller wanted to know, and I, at a certain point in the call, I began to think that he wasn't really serious, that this was, you know, let's have a little sport with the Catholic radio host kind of thing. That's, that was the impression I began to get on the basis of the answers that you heard. But before that, he wanted to know, well, how do we know what's right and wrong? And it was there that I told him that God has told us what is right and wrong. I referenced Jesus, and I don't think I gave any kind of discourse on adultery per se. But the, apparently the part of the conversation you didn't hear was when I was telling him that because God says that we should live a certain way. And it wasn't exactly in those words, but that was the essence of it. So his, as I recall, his point was, well, why does that have to be? Why can't we decide what's right, what we want to do? And it sort of went downhill from there. So you missed the part where I was talking about God.
Okay, well, I, you know, I just felt like telling him that God gave, you know, now it's a hookup culture. It's a tragedy. People are, fewer people go to church. Fewer people believe in God. More people believe in abortion. More people believe in hookup culture. God is, it's really terrible what's happening in this country. And then I see these soldiers coming back without arms and legs, and the women stay faithful to them. They live with them. They, and yet people, if they see, you know, when you, when we get married, we say, in sickness and in health until death do us part, for better or for worse. Not just when a woman gets old or if a man gets sick, or you stay with that person, you know, like the Huckabees, 50 years, you know, married. That's very rare now with I'm not old, but that's very rare with younger people, you know, and I think it's just a tragedy. Why should we not have five wives, or have, you know, children with every one of them? Or it's just, you know, God said adultery is wrong, fornication is wrong, it's a sin. You will go to hell if you do those things.
Tina, and you don't have to convince me. I am 100% on board with what you're saying, and it was not to that same length, but it was more or less that same message that I was starting to explain to this gentleman before you came in. So I'm with you.
Well, thank you for listening.
You're welcome. I appreciate it. Appreciate your passion on this issue. Thank you for that. And you noticed? Not a single bullwhip cracked the whole time. I promise.
Great.
All right, Tina. You're welcome back anytime. Please take me up on it. 888-914-9149. Julio, down by the school. No, in Florida. Good morning, Julio. Welcome.
Good morning, Patrick. How are you?
I am well, sir. Thank you.
Like I told the screener, I'm calling to get some discernment on a situation in my family. My wife owns, well, she was kind of given this house by her dad. The house has two stories, and our stepdaughter, which I consider my daughter, mm-hmm. Is living on the second floor. And, you know, the bottom floor is basically used sometimes when my wife goes there, is, you know, it's in another state.
Okay.
So the thing is that our stepdaughter is living with her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And even though she, you know, she says and she has a lot of, you know, like a good rapport with my wife. So she tells my wife that they are not intimate or anything, but they're living together. And I wanted to know what is our responsibility as parents. And, you know, I already told my wife that I don't agree with that, that I think that's wrong. And, you know,
what did she say?
Living together. That they are adults and that, you know, that she's not doing anything, that they are not intimate, and that it's a good thing that the boyfriend is there because he can kind of protect her. Because the house is kind of, you know, away from most things. So it's a little bit secluded. So, you know, she thinks it's good for her safety.
Mm-hmm. Did you, by chance, illegally adopt this stepdaughter of yours?
I'm sorry?
Did you legally adopt her when you got married?
No.
Okay. And she's how old?
She's still alive. She's 25.
Okay. Well, a couple of practical things I should mention. One is that she's not legally your daughter in that sense, and I don't know the details of when you got married and all of that, but she's also an adult. So there's no real lever that you can push on that could compel her to not do that. You don't have that available to you the way you might if she were your daughter, you know, by blood, and let's say she was 18 years old, or even then she would still be an adult technically, but you'd have a bit more leverage is what I mean. I don't think you have that kind of leverage in this situation, or at least it doesn't sound like it. Plus, her mother is blithely okay with it. Are she and the boyfriend in love, or are they just sort of casual boyfriend-girlfriend?
No, they seem to be in love. They've been together since, I don't know, like 8 years ago.
Okay. Well, it seems to me that human nature being what it is, that her saying that, well, there's nothing happening is almost certainly not true. There almost certainly are things happening, because if you have two young people at the prime of their physical beauty and they love each other and they're alone together and spending the night together in the same room or in the same house, inevitably it's going to happen. It would be superhuman, heroic sanctity for them not to do that, it seems to me. And I don't get the impression that they're practicing heroic sanctity if they're willing to live together this way. So I think you're right to be concerned that the likelihood of fornication going on is pretty high, it seems to me. So what can you do about it? I don't think there's much you can do about it. But maybe you can, in talking with your wife, impress upon her that in addition to that sin that's very likely going on, there's another issue, and that is scandal. And this gives scandal. Now, I don't know how many people know about this living arrangement. I mean, aside from millions of people who know about it now because we're talking about it, but they don't know where your house is. But there is the scandal that's given, because if people know this couple, they're not married and they're living under the same roof, they're going to reach the same conclusion that I just reached, which is they're probably doing the things that married people do, but they're not married. So that's an important thing. Jesus says, you know, there will be scandals, but woe to that man by whom scandals come, or from whom scandals come. And so that's something maybe you can talk with your wife about, and perhaps she might see her way clear, because she has some leverage here that you don't, and she may be able to remonstrate with your daughter and get that guy to move out, you know, because it's just not a good living arrangement. Furthermore, one final thing, and maybe as her stepfather, you could share this with her. You know, just let her know, honey, the statistics bear out the fact that couples who live together before marriage have a far, far, far higher divorce rate than those couples who begin marriage, you know, without having lived together before that. And if she has in mind to marry this guy at some point, you should let her know that every day that she extends this situation, not only is he enjoying the benefits of marriage without any complicating responsibility, he doesn't have to commit to her, he doesn't have to be responsible to her, he doesn't have to buy her a ring, he doesn't have to raise children with her, but he gets to enjoy her. It's very exploitative on his part. And furthermore, if she really thinks he's the right guy, the chances are that they will stay together once they do get married is pretty low. I would share that with her as well.
Okay. And the fact that the house is owned by my wife, basically, and, you know, she's allowing that.
I understand.
That put us, you know, in terms of like receiving communion and all of that.
Yeah, it doesn't affect you really. I mean, if you've tried, if you've spoken up, if you've said this is not the right thing to do, you're not in any, you didn't commit any sin, and you didn't commit a sin of omission because you tried to do something. So as far as you're concerned, now, as far as your wife is concerned, I think that's a different story. I mean, I think that she is materially participating in a remote way, but somewhat proximate to the sin that your stepdaughter's involved in. So for your wife, it's probably a different story, I should think. And but for you, I don't see any reason why you should not go to communion. I mean, unless there's something more that we haven't talked about, but other than that, you should have a clear conscience if you've tried and you didn't get anywhere.
Okay, yeah, that's what I wanted to understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what was basically my role in all of this?
Well, since you're the stepfather, the thing to remember is you do have a fatherly leadership role, and so although it's somewhat complicated because she's a stepdaughter, she's not your biological daughter, but you can still do what fathers should do, and that is to admonish her lovingly, to guide her, to tell her what I just said a moment ago about he's just exploiting the situation for his own satisfaction. She's not benefiting in any real way. The best years of her life are ticking away one at a time. She's given 8 years to this guy, and what does she have to show for it but a stack of receipts? Nothing. So, you know, you as dad, I think if you can help her see that the guy's really using her, and there's no commitment there. He's, you know, he doesn't show any signs, from what I'm hearing from you, that he's serious about marrying her. He's just got a good gig. He's got a great situation. And why ruin that?
Well, I think that he might be thinking about marriage. The one that's not thinking about marriage is her.
Mm-hmm.
Like she says that she's not ready to get married. So
if she's ready to live under the same roof with this man and do what they're almost certainly doing and share meals together, she's ready to get married.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see it like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, as you as father figure, I would try as gracefully and tactfully and wisely as possible to try to guide her and tell her what's going on. But if this guy is willing to do this for this long, I don't get the impression he's the right one. He seems like a bit of a clod.
I need to clarify that he's been living with her only for like 2 years at the most.
Oh, I thought you said 8. So you mean they've been together in a relationship?
They've been, you know, boyfriend and girlfriend for 8 years, but yeah. He just moved in like 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's not a good situation. Not for any of them spiritually, of course, and certainly not for her. Mm-hmm. If she has a plan in the back of her mind to get married to him, he's not showing any evidence that he's pursuing her. He's already got her. He's got her right where he wants her. Why pursue her? Why bother to exert any kind of, you know, responsibility? I would help her see that for what it really is. And maybe when she opens her eyes to it, she'll say, I don't really want this guy in my life. Yeah. If they want to do what they're doing, they should get married. If they don't want to get married, then they shouldn't be doing what they're doing, because that's reserved for married people.
Yeah. And let's hypothetically say that they really are not engaging, you know, in intimacy it's still an
scandal.
Issue.
Scandal, okay. My friend.
Okay.
Yeah.
Understood.
All right. Well, I don't envy you your difficult situation, but I do appreciate your thoughtfulness. You're trying to do the right thing, and I admire that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, Julio, thank you. Appreciate that. We're going to take a break and come back to your phone calls. The number is 888-914-9... I get it. 888-914-9149. Hey, do you remember that religious sister in Italy who won, like, a really gigantic music festival by singing Alicia Keys' song? I have some update news on that religious sister right after this. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Hello. Hello again.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Real life solutions you can believe in. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Check it out. The Merry Beggars have something amazing in store for you and your family this coming Sunday night as they wrap up the first week of Advent. As we wrap up the first week of Advent. Join us for Christmas Live, a one-hour variety show that celebrates Advent and the joy of the Christmas season. You'll smile, laugh, and enjoy live musical performances that might even inspire you to sing along. You might even dance. As we pause our mystery series On the Night Train during the month of December, be sure to tune in each Sunday night at 6 p.m. Central for something special to prepare your heart for Christmas. This weekend, it's Christmas Live, only on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. All right, I'm coming to the phones here in just a minute, so thank you for holding, those of you, thank you for being patient, those of you who are holding. Cristina Scuccia, I'm going to have to give a little bit of it away. Remember the nun? She was on, it was in 2014, and she was on The Voice of Italy, and she just stunned everybody. The Guardian's got an interesting article about this, and she just was a wow performance. I didn't care for it myself, and I saw some of it on video, and
you
thought
you were one of the only people saying,
this is ridiculous.
This isn't good.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was like, oh, this is so amazing. And then you're like, I don't think so.
And I'm glad you brought that up, Cyrus, because I wasn't going to say I told you so. But when I saw this, I thought two thumbs down. This is not appropriate. This is not good. It's not good for her. She's, you know, a young, pretty religious sister. So she was in her religious habit, you know, dancing around and singing this. What was the song? No One by Alicia Keys. Never heard it. She was a religious sister in the Ursuline Sisters of the Holy Family Convent in Milan. She won the show that summer with her performance of What a Feeling.
What a feeling.
Yeah.
This is it.
From Flashdance.
And it's fun seeing the nuns on the side all jumping up and down and
they're dancing,
cheering for her. And I liked that.
I didn't.
I know you didn't.
I know, I'm Mr. Stick in the Mud. I'm Mr. Wet Blanket. But I was really turned off by it and disturbed by it. Everybody was loving it. The Cardinals, she went on to do a cover version of Madonna's song, Like a Virgin. I don't know if you've ever heard that song, but it's not a good song.
I mean, it's a catchy song. She met the Pope and gave him a copy of her singing that song. I don't know.
Like a virgin?
Yeah, I don't know how true that is. Yeah, but I know I heard that somewhere.
Mm. So, long story short, hate to break it to you, but she left religious life. Big surprise. I mean, I feel bad for her. She had been in religious life. She's now, how old is she now? 34. And so she's been doing this singing publicly and all of that. I just think it's entirely inconsistent with religious life. That's not what you're in religious life for. And I know all the arguments. Oh, isn't it great? She was, you know, showcasing a positive thing about the Catholic Church and showcasing positive things about religious life. I remember, Cyrus, when this was sort of big in the news 4 or 5 years ago, whatever it was, And I have a very close, long-time friend who's a religious sister in the Carmelites that we talk about from time to time, the Carmelites in Alhambra. And I sent her the video, and I said, what do you think about this? Because I'm a man, and I'm a layman at that, so I don't have from an insider perspective maybe an insight on what this might look like to a religious or a religious sister. So I sent it to her, and she was horrified. And she's a very wonderful woman, you know, very wise and lively and lovely, and I can't say enough great things about her, but she was horrified. She says, this is terrible. This is utterly inconsistent with her purported desire to be a religious sister. Anyway, so sad, long story short, she decided to leave. And so she's no longer in the convent. She's dressed in high heels when they doing this interview about her. High heels, red pantsuit, pierced nose. You get the idea. She's working as a waitress in Spain now. And she's going to be pursuing a career in singing. I mean, she certainly has a tremendous talent, no doubt about that. But this is, to my mind, an example of where, you know, if you want to preserve, I'll put it this way. If you want to preserve your state in life, your chosen state in life, so in the case of a religious sister, this kind of thing is not going to help you do that. It's going to distract you and pull you away. The allure of fame, wealth, adulation, popularity, performing in front of people, those are all intoxicating things in their own way. But if you're in religious life, your purpose in religious life is to more closely seek after Jesus and be more hidden and prayerful and serving, etc. So these two, like Jesus said, you can't serve two masters. You'll either love one and despise the other, but you can't serve both. And there he's talking about mammon, which is not just money, but it's in general, just in general, things of this world, including money. And Jesus says you can't serve two masters. And I would translate this for the married folk, being a married man myself, I would translate this way. If you want to preserve your marriage and you want to be really good at being a husband or being a wife and raising your children, all that, then anything that would draw you away from that, you shouldn't do that, because it's just going to have this inexorable effect of eating away at your commitment to your marriage. As Jesus said, you can't serve two masters. And I have no clue what's going on in this woman's mind beyond what I read and what I've seen in the videos, but I hate to say I told you so, Cyrus, but, well, I'm not going to say it. We'll leave it unsaid. How about that?
Well, let's hope, as I was just talking to Sarah behind the scenes here, let's hope that this turns into a great conversion story mm-hmm. when she sees how fruitless this path she's yeah. currently on is.
That's a great way of looking at it. Positive. Hope and encouragement. Way to go, Sarah. Have you ever heard that song, Sarah, by Starship?
Sarah?
She's shaking her head no. You've heard it, Sarah. You know you've heard it.
Of course she has.
Of course. And then there's also the Fleetwood Mac, Sarah. Different song. Okay, well, I just wanted to bring that up. And maybe, in your kindness, say a little prayer for her. The former sister, Christina. Say a little prayer. Oh, the Hall & Oates song? I never liked that song. Sarah smiled. Never on my hit list. So please don't play it, Cyrus. 888-914. You know what you can do? Play the Starship, the Starship Sarah. Not now, just at some point. Because she claims she never heard it before. Let's go to Diane now in Minnesota. Hi, Diane.
Hello. Regarding your last caller, the stepfather of the 25-year-old stepdaughter mm-hmm. living with her boyfriend, of knowing him yes. for 8 years, and they've been in the relationship together for two now, is that that stepfather should talk to the father of the guy. He needs to man up. He needs to make that man justified in his acts with his stepdaughter.
Okay.
They're talking about toxic men syndrome. There isn't such a thing. Men need to approach the other men and just say, hey, you're doing wrong. You need to do right.
Okay.
And then move on from there, you know? Say it, mean it. You know, he's got to love her for what she is. We're all brothers and sisters in Christ, but we all have to work with each other, too. Make sense?
Yes, it does. He's got to crack that whip.
Yeah, where's the dad of the boy? Where's the dad of this 25-year-old man? Why isn't he stepping in the picture?
Yes.
You know, the men need to pull these young men aside and say, no, it ain't happening. You're going to respect my daughter, your daughter someday, and everyone else's daughter. That's all.
Fair enough.
Hopefully Christina chooses her career in music and can take her monetary value and put it back into the Catholic faith.
That would be awesome.
Yes, it would.
That would be.
All right.
How much snow do you have on the ground where you are in Minnesota, Diane?
7 inches.
Ooh.
Wow. Roads are clear. Good driving.
Stay warm and well fed.
Thank you. God bless you.
Thank you, Diane. Great hearing from you. I agree with the man up part about it. We didn't even talk about the guy's father. Okay, let's go to Jacob in San Antonio, Texas. Good morning, Jacob.
Morning, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm a new Catholic. I came into the church this last Easter Vigil, and in the last 18 months of coming to Mass, I've noticed less and less reverence in Mass, and it's really making me struggle. So our priest last Sunday decided to pop off a confetti cannon to celebrate the new year, the liturgical new year. And it really doesn't settle well with my spirit.
Can I intervene? You're saying this happened during Mass?
During his homily, yes.
Okay.
So
it sounds festive somehow.
Well, I could understand that, but to me it doesn't seem reverent enough for the representation of the Last Supper.
I agree.
This is the sacrifice of the Mass. So am I being a Pharisee for feeling this way? Should I just pray for my father and let that be? I'm looking for some advice.
Yeah. Well, my comment there was not intended to condone what he did. I think it's hugely inappropriate and frivolous and has no place in Mass. So I would feel the same way you do. Is he the pastor of the parish, or is he one of the priests on staff?
Yes, he is the pastor. He's the only priest we have for the church.
I see. Okay. Well, one thing I do know, having visited the fair city of San Antonio many times, is that there are quite a few Catholic churches. So if this particular parish that you're in right now has a penchant, or if he has a penchant for doing frivolous, silly, inappropriate things, and I don't know if he does because you haven't mentioned it, you could always seek out a parish where you find that stuff not happening. And even though it might be a bit of an inconvenience for you, especially if you're finding yourself as a new Catholic. And by the way, welcome home, Jacob. Come on in. The water's terrible, by the way. It always seems to be a bit of an uproar in the Catholic Church all the time. So you've come in at the perfect time. But it may be that if this is irking you and robbing you of your peace and you're not able to concentrate because of the silliness, then there's nothing preventing you from finding a parish where things are more traditional and more reverent. And that may be the thing to do, even though it's inconvenient. Because my guess is that you're not likely to change his mind. If he's doing that kind of thing, I don't get the impression that you as a new convert are going to be able to, you know, get his mind right and he'll say, oh, okay, you're right, I'll stop doing that. I don't foresee that as a possibility. Anything's possible, but it doesn't seem likely. But My desire for you, Jacob, as a brother in Christ, is that you have a fulfilling, happy, stable, reverent parish life. And there are many such parishes. I would just start looking, you know?
Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome. Call me back another time. I'd love to talk to you again. I'll be right back.